We'll start with Sifyut Beis. And today we're really talking very practically about how to do the actual tefillah. So if you take a look in Sifyut Beis, Tzarech Lahatpil Yidei HaKli. The Shulchan Aruch is quoting from the Mordechai that when you tabel a kli, you have to tabel the entire kli. And the way that the Shulchan Aruch makes this point is by saying that even the handles need to be tabled, meaning even if the handles don't ever come in contact with the food, maybe the handles are plastic, and the kli itself is metal. So maybe you only have to tovel the metal part. That's not true. And this is something that a lot of people make a mistake. When it comes to kashering, so there's an ability to kasher part, and then to kasher the other part. And if you have a very long kli, and it doesn't fit into your boiling water that you're kashering with, you could put in one side, then you could put in the other side. But with toveling, you can't do part and then part. You can't tovel one side and then tovel the other side. You can't tovel just the part that touches the food. You have to tovel the entire kli. And one of the places, so that is, as we said, that includes the handle. You know, you see people sometimes that have, at the mikvah, so they have a spatula, they have something where the end of it is metal, and the handle is plastic. So they hold on to the plastic, and they just dip the metal in, and they take it out. It's not good tefillah. You have to do tefillah again. You have to tovel the entire thing into the water at the same time. Now, one place where this is an interesting question is when you're toveling these electrical appliances. I think we mentioned this one of the other days, that if you're toveling a sandwich maker, so l'chor, you need to also tovel the plug. Meaning the hole, the cord, and the plug, it's all considered part of the kli. The whole thing needs to be toveled. It's a little bit of a debate. I know that the OU does not require that to be done. They say you can tovel just the actual kli. They see the cord as a separate entity. Sometimes the cord really is a separate entity. You know, you can take it out and put it back in. But when it's connected, so that's a little bit of a discussion. And certainly, I don't know if we would say you have to go back, because you have one to rely upon. But the better way to do it is to tovel the entire thing. So that is officially the halacha. And that's what the Shulchan Aruch is stressing here, that even the handles of the kli, which might not even be made out of something that requires tefillah, like plastic or wood, still requires tefillah because it's all part of the kli. Okay. That is Sifyut Beis. Sifyut Gimel discusses Chatzitza. Again, we're talking tonight very much about the practical elements of Tfilas Kelim. So, the Gemara in Erevin, which actually I think we have it here on the Makoro sheet. If you look all the way at the end, in source 37. So, the Gemara says, this is Gemara in the beginning of Erevin. Kidrab Yitzchak, Damar Rab Yitzchak, Davar Torah, Rubo umakbid Allah chotzit. So if you have two criteria, the chatzitza, right, when we do a tefillah, whether it's tefillah of a person, whether it's tefillah of a kli, so the entire person, the entire kli needs to be toveled. What if the person has something on their body and they're not able to tovel because they have something on their body? Or what if a person is trying to tovel a kli and the kli has something on it? So the Gemara says as follows, Dover Torah, Rubo umakbid Allah, it's chotzes. If it's rov of the kli has this chatzitza on it, and it's something that you're makbid about, meaning you care that it's there, you would want that not to be there, so then it's chotzes. And that's midiraisa. And midiraisa, we learn that from Lacham Moshe Nesina. That's number one. Ushaino makbid Allah, Eino chotzeitz. And if you're not makbid, it's not chotzeitz. V'gozru al rubo she'eino makbid, mishum rubo hamakbid. So they were gozer on if you just have one of the criteria. So it's rov, even though you're not makbid about it. So it's something that you don't care about, but it's on a majority of the kli. Or, the other way, it's a miut, but it's something that you're makbid about. So in both of those cases, there's an issur derabbanan. So we basically have three rules. If it's rov and makbid, it's a chatzitza d'oraisa. If it's only one of those, if it's rov ve'eno makbid, or it's makbid, but it's only on a miut, so then it's still a problem mid derabbanan. And what's heter gomor, what's completely okay, what does not count as a chatzitza, is if you have two on your side. It's a miut, and it's something that's eno makbid. So the Shulchan Aruch, that's the Hakdama here for the Shulchan Aruch in Sifyut Gimel. So in Sifyut Gimel, Sorich Lahavir HaChaluda Kodem Tefillah. Sometimes you have rust, that's developed on the kli. So he says you need to remove it, kodem atfila. V'im lo havir, im makbid alav, so the tzchot says. Now, he only tells you if you're makbid, because it doesn't matter if it's on rov anymore. Once you have one criteria fulfilled, once it's makbid, it's only already mid derabbanan going to be a problem. And mid derabbanan, you know, we care about the derabbanans also. Once it's derabbanan, it's going to be a problem of a chatzitza. So that's what the Shulchan Aruch says. V'im shif shif, the nasan b'gicholim, and if you try to rub it off and you burn the area, so there's nothing be'en there. V'nishar adayim ma'at shal chaluda shlo yachol lavor al yedei kach. You cannot remove that rust. Havim yuto she'eno makbralav ve'eno chotzeitz. So then it's not a chatzitza because it's miut and it's eno makbral. Then it's not going to be a chatzitza. So that's always going to be the ikker question of is this rov? Is it makbir? So then that's, you have a problem with the rabban. And it's the same thing when let's say a woman goes to the mikvah. So we have the same discussion of if it's meat on her body, if it's something that she's makbid about. Now, why does the Shulchan Aruch say though that you have to remove the chaluda before the tefillah? Like in the very beginning, he says you need to remove it. What do you mean? What if it's meat and it's no makbid? Like he only says that if you tried and at the end you weren't able to get it off, then we can assume it's meat and no makbid. So you see here something that we say by tefillas isha as well, and that is that. That's not the right way to say it. The minog is that we try not to have any chatzitza. L'chadchila. L'chadchila, we try to make sure that there is no chatzitza, even though really me'ikar adin, if it's me, it's inomat, but it's okay. And that's why, even the halacha by women, we tell them they should take off a necklace. Even though a necklace is probably not a chatzitza at all, I mean, it's free. You know, when she goes in the water, it's not going to be on her body anymore. Still, we don't. The Ramah brings that down by tefillah of a person, and as well here, the Isra Heter says that also by tefillas kelim, we should try. The minog is to try not to have any chatzitz on it. But as you see, if you're not able to get it off, so it's going to be okay. What's the big application of chalamaisa? Stickers. So we all know that you get to the mikvah and then you realize there's a sticker on. So you try to take off the sticker, and what's left is all this gook, this glue. And you're sitting there with your nail trying to scrape it all off. So the question is, what's the proper thing to do? So first of all, the minog is that there shouldn't be any chatzitza. So before we get into the analysis, ideally you should really take it off. Many people know that the easiest way to get it off is you use acetone, like nail polish remover. That gets it off very quickly. That's the easy way to get it off very quickly, the glue. Is you use nail polish remover and it gets off right away. But the question is that something that you're makbid on? Now, it's interesting. When you have a question of makbid, how do you define makbid? Is that based on something that's objectively, that the oilum is makbid on? Is it based on you specifically? So the Aruch HaShulchan says we don't know, and you have to be makbid for both. You have to be makbid for things that are subjectively an issue, and also things that are objectively an issue. So, meaning, if everyone's fine with it, but you have this, you know, I can't have anything on there, so that's going to be a problem. So, What's the story? So, l'chachilo again, you should take it off. But let's say b'diavad, you get home, and you realize that it's still on there. Well, let's say you tried to get it off, and there's a little bit left, and you're sitting there, you're scraping, you didn't bring any nail polish remover with you, and you get to the mikvah, and you cannot get off that little amount. You know, it's there. I mean, you could probably stay for another half an hour and eventually get it off. So, here the question is, we have to ask that question of, is this something that bothers you or not? If your wife knew about it, would she say, oh, I can't serve this until we get this off? Like this is, it's gross. There's you know, there's glue on the fork. I have a feeling that most people's wives, if they knew about it, it would bother them. They might not see it, but that doesn't mean that they're not mocking. If they knew about it, they would not be okay with it. Sometimes though, Taka, like you have a plate, and on the bottom of the plate there's a sticker. So yesh l'dun, that might be something that people are not makbid. It's certainly miyut, right? The whole, it's not like half of the plate is covered with stickers and glue. It's one little sticker. Now sometimes people, I've found out that from having daughters, that sometimes people like to leave the tag on things because it's like shows like, oh, you have that kind of, you know, boots, or you have that type of, so sometimes people like to leave the little like hologram on that says, you know, whatever, I don't know, Fox Home, Golf Home, you know, because it shows, you know, it's not on the top, it's not where you're eating, it's on the bottom. It's like the nice hologram of the company, or sometimes you might have something that on the side or on the handle, there's a little sticker that has instructions, you know, if it requires some kind of instructions. So those are things that l'chori are not makbid. So again, l'chadchila, it's probably best to take them off, unless you really, really want it there. But because then at a certain point, it might be considered part of the kli, if you want it to be there. But certainly if you get home, and it's on a miyut, and honestly, you and you think regular people would not be makbid, again, it's not a fancy teacup that you're going to use on a Shabbos. It's a coffee mug, and on the bottom, there's a tiny little hologram that says Fox. Very likely that's something that nobody's makbid on, and it's miyut. So l'chadchila we wouldn't do it, but if it is in a place that it's a problem, like you get there and you see the glue, and it is makbid, you need to go back to the mikveh, you need to do tefillah again, and you would do tefillah with a bracha. Now, if you're still at the mikveh, and you're still being osek in the tefillah, you don't make a new bracha, because you haven't had hesach hadas yet from the tefillah. But if you've gone home and then you realize that there's still glue on it, so you really should be going back. Again, if you're makbid, if it's something that you're makbid on, because that's going to be a chatzitza midrabanan, that's going to require a new tefillah with a new bracha. Okay, let's take that's Yud Gimel. Let's take a look all the way towards the beginning. You know, we don't ask questions why the Beis Yosef did it in the order that he did, but you know, we sort of reordered things here. And right now we're really talking about the practical elements of how to do the Maisa Tefillah. So we have to jump now back to the beginning of the Siman, and here we're going to talk about Sif Beis. Yeah.
If you have a thing that is like a plea that has a piece of plastic, but the actual part,
yes, because the whole thing has to go into the mikvah, even the handles. Everything has to go into the mikvah. So that would also be a chatzitz again, if it's something that you're makbid on. Okay. If you look, take a look in Sif Beis, so here he tells you how to hold the kli. Tzarech shi kli rafui v'yado, v'shas tefillah. You have to hold the kli gently. Shim mahadko v'yado, havi chatzitza. Because if you're holding it very, very tight, and where your fingers are, no water is getting between your finger and the kli, so it's a chatzitza. V'yimlich lech yado b'mayim tefillah. But if you stick your hands into the water, first there's water on your hands, and then you hold it, so ein lochosh. Here the Ramah says that a dafka has to be mikveh water. The Taz is not sure. The Taz thinks it's probably okay to use other water because the idea is that once the mikveh water touches that water, so that neshika, that contact between the water on your hands and the water in the mikveh makes the water on your hands into main mikveh. There's a little bit of a discussion here. But anyway, the most practical thing is that you would stick your hand, you're not going to go to a berez. You're right there. You're going to stick your hand into the mikveh. So I know everyone's very makbid to, you know, the juggling, you know, like the throwing it up in the air and trying to catch it while they're in the mikvah. So that's nice, and I'd probably do that also. But you see that the Shulchan Aruch is not super makbid about it. He just says you have to hold it gently. Hold it gently. So, you know, obviously if you're holding it, you know, like super tight, you know, you see the red in your fingers, so that's what he's bothered by. But if you hold it, you know, with a gentle hold, you assume that the water gets between it, and you know, you can just move your hand to another area, and then your hand's all wet, and there's water, you know, again, the general principle in halacha is lo nitna hatorah l'malachei asheris. You don't have to worry about a fractional, tiny little spot that might not have. You know, you're supposed to be normal, so you do it in a normal way. Right? The Rishonim bring this up by a lot of things. They bring it up by bedikas chametz. They bring it up by how square nowadays when you get your tefillin, so they measure it with a laser to make sure it's perfectly, perfectly square. They obviously didn't always have these lasers to measure. The Rishonim say that it's, you know, lo nitna hatorah l'malachei asheris. Has to be square, but it doesn't have to be down to the millimeter in order to be square. So same thing here, and you see that very clearly in the halacha, that you have to just hold it, and you hold it roughly. Okay. Now, when you are tumbling many kelim, like sometimes in a mesh bag, you'll put some people will put lots of forks in a mesh bag, so that's fine, but you should shake the bag around while it's in the water to make sure that the water gets to all the different parts. And also what's interesting is if you're tuvling like a cup, so you want to tuvle it, you want to put it into the water facing down with the opening upwards in order so that the water fills up. Theoretically, if you put it straight down, it could create an air bubble, and then when you pull it up, the inside actually didn't get wet. So that's why it's important to make sure that there's no air bubbles when you're doing something, when you're tuvling something like a cup or a pot. All right, moving on to Gimel. As we said, we're going to finish Tfilas Kelim tonight. Gimel. Yivarech al Tfilas Keli. The Imen Shnayim, or Yosem, Yivarech al Tfilas Kelim. So also, a halacha, a lot of people don't know that if you're only tovling one thing, the lashon of the bracha is al tefilas keli. If you're tovling a number of things, it's al tefilas kelim. The Aruch HaShulchan and other Achronim write, that's not the minhag. The minhag is we always say al tefilas kelim. Because the bracha is on the mitzvah of tefilas kelim. So you can say that bracha even if you're only tovling one kli. So I think that is the accepted minhag, that a lot of people do that. But you're certainly not wrong for saying al tefilas kelim, but the minhag seems to be tefilas kelim. Okay, now we're going to flip all the way back to the end of the simon. And we're going to talk about something that we mentioned earlier, but give it a little bit more treatment now. And that's tefillah of a goy or tefillah al yedei a katan. Take a look in Yud Daled, Sif Yud Daled. And I think we are almost having done every single sif. Ein ma'aminim katan al tefillas kelim. A katan is not neman al tefillas kelim. Aval, says the Ramah, aval im tovlo lufnei gadol have a tefillah. So the lashon of im ma'aminim is very indicative, it's very suggestive, that it's not a fundamental problem for a katan to do the tefillah. But rather, it's much more an issue of we don't know if he did it well, if he did it properly. And indeed, that's what the Ramban and the Rashba both write. The Nosei Kelim here make reference to the Rashba. The Ramban and the Rashba write that tefillas kelim does not need kavana. Nafkamina, if you're standing over the mikvah and you drop the kli into the mikvah and it goes all the way in and you have to pull it out, you did tefillah. You missed the bracha because you already did the tefillah, but the tefillah is done already. It doesn't need kavan in order to be tovel. And therefore, fundamentally, a katan can do tefillah. The issue is that we're not going to believe him that he did it or assume that he did it properly. And that's why you need a gadol standing there. But if you have a gadol standing there, so the gadol is able to do it. And if you take a look in the next sif, same thing. Im hitfil kelim al yedei goy, also lem tefillah. If a goy does the tefillah, it counts. Aval eno neman al tefillah. But again, it's the same issue that we have a problem or a question of whether we believe them or not. Now the Taz notes here in Sif Katan Yud Zayin that you really shouldn't allow a katan to do it, because then you miss out on the bracha. Because we had discussed this earlier, like the katan can't make the bracha for your mitzvah, and you can't make the bracha if the katan's doing it. So the Taz thinks that it's a problem to have a katan or a goy do it because you miss out on the bracha. So therefore, what does he say you should do? He says that you should make a bracha, be told the first one, and then allow the katan. Let's say you go with your kid, and you know you go with your 9-year-old son, and you want to go to the tefillah, and he wants to be part of it. So he says, oh, you know, Abba, can I do it? So you say, great, I'll make the bracha. I'll do the first fork. And then you can do all the other ones. You stand there, and you make sure that he does it properly. You can do it. It's a great chinuch opportunity. He can literally do the tefillah. But you just make sure you do the first one, and you make a bracha. This happens to be what a lot of restaurants and caterers do. They will have, they'll go down, they'll make the bracha, they'll start the process, then they'll stand there, and they'll have all the workers do the tefillah. They'll watch them to make sure that they're doing it properly. But they don't want to, you know, there's hundreds of things, they're carrying all the things and bringing it down to the water. So as long as someone's standing there and watching them, so that would be okay. We made reference to this the other day as well. It's also just a really interesting, and Hanoch, you were asking a little bit about it, so I looked into it a little bit more. A ger. When a ger is megayer, so does he have to do tefillas kelim on his kelim? So what would you say? What's the pashtus? The pashtus is that yes, they were owned by a Gentile. Now they're owned by a Jew. So part of the tefillah, part of the gerus process, right after he becomes a ger, he has to go take all of his kelim, and now he has to tovel his kelim. And that is certainly the pashtus, and the Shevet Alevi writes that way. But he does note that it's very odd that there's very little literature about this in the Achronim. Now, some say, yeah, because it wasn't so common in Christian lands that in Muslim lands that Jews were converting. It didn't happen so often. Still, it didn't happen so often. But Lechora, every time they converted, they would kasher their kelim, and then they would need to be tov on them. Like, it's very strange that you don't find, I mean, like I just said that Shevet Alevi, Rav Ozner is the one who says that you have to do it. Rav Ozner is a contemporary. You know, what happened in the 1700s, the 1600s, the 1500s? Why aren't there tshuvas about this? So there are a number of modern day achronim who poskim who say that they don't need to do tefillah. The first one to suggest this was the Avnei Nezer, The Avnei Nezer suggests that they don't have to do tefillin. Yes, this is a big chiddush. He says that when he's nichnas into Kedushas Yisrael, so his pater nichnas with him. But what in the world does that mean? Like, the kalim didn't go through a geiros process. Well, what does that mean? That the pots of... But the Tzitz Eliezer quotes this lahalacha. He quotes this Avnei Nezer, and he says that a ger does not need to do tefillin on his kalim. Ravadja also paskins that you don't need to do tefillah. And he had a different svara. It's a svara that we've seen already and we've talked about. And that is that it needs to be dumya de midjan. Remember, the mocker for tefillah scalim is from midjan. So there, they got it from an outside party that was a Gentile. And now that they've acquired it, so they have to do tefillah. So he says, this is totally different. They're your kalim. And now you've done a conversion. So now you're... So he says it's not dumya de midjan, and he patters it because of that. Again, a lot of it is based on this precedent that we don't find the achronim requiring this bite. When they talk about geirim, they don't talk about this issue. Rav Asher Weiss says a different chiddush. He wants to say that you see from midjan, it's similar to Rav Asher, but he says that you see from midjan that the din is that it's when you acquire it through a kinyan. Either you buy it, or he gives it to you as a matana. But here, you didn't get it through a kinyan. You just mamela it, you know, it was always yours. It's just that you changed. So also he says that because it's so different, he doesn't think that you're chayav. So what do most poskim say halacha l'maisa? So most poskim say halacha l'maisa that they should do tefillah on the kalim that are chayav midioraisa, but without a bracha. Now the kalim that are chayav midioraisa, meaning the metal kalim, this would be another nafkamina between metal and glass. The nafkamina between metal and glass is not what? That you don't have to make a bracha, right? You make a bracha on metal, you make a bracha on glass, right? But one other nafkamina would a ger be required to? So nowadays, the post can say that whatever's chayiv midioraisa, a ger should tovel. Whatever's not chayiv midioraisa, a ger would not need to tovel. Okay, the last sif in the Shulchan Aruch, in Kuf Chaf here, Yerodeya, is im shochach v'lo hitpil klin erev Shabbos, o merev yontiv. If you did not do tefillah on erev Shabbos or erev yontiv, you're not able to do tefillah on Shabbos. Why? Because it's dumya to tikkun kli. It looks like tikkun kli. It looks like some form of makabah patish. It looks like you're bringing some type of completion to the kli. It wasn't usable, and now it's usable. So therefore, what should you do? So the Shulchan Aruch says, yitnenu l'goy b'matana, v'achar kach yishalenu mimenu u'motu l'shtamish bo. So he says the kunz. You give it to a goy as a matana, then you ask the goy if you could borrow it, and then you can use it, because it's not yours. It's a goy's. Now, how are you allowed to do a kinyan? How are you allowed to give a kinyan on Shabbos? So we already said that when something is with Sorech Shabbos, you are allowed to. You're allowed to bring a gift to someone on Shabbos, and they can be koned if they're going to use it on Shabbos. So here, you're giving it to the guy with Sorech Shabbos, because you need him to own it in order for you to be able to use the kli.
What happens after Shabbos?
Oh, perfect. So the Taz here, if you take a look in Yud Ches, nearly the high tikuna ena el lefisha. This only works for Shabbos. There are people that try to do this with like electrical appliances. They don't want to tell the electric appliance. So they give it to their neighbor, and then they borrow it from their neighbor for the next 10 years. So the Taz says that does not work. It says, the Hainu l'osa Shabbos, or if it's chol and you're in a place where there isn't a mikvah. Aval la'acha Shabbos, or when you get to a mikvah, since it's going to yishtakeya olamis biyad Yisrael, since it's really going to stay by you, so you can't really say that it's the goyis and you're borrowing it forever. If it's going to stay by you, it's yours. And he brings a raya by Talus. That the Talus she'ula, he writes, is pater, but it's only pater for 30 days. What do you mean? If it's she'ula, it's not mine. Why is it? Why after 30 days? Because after a while, the halachic perspective is that it's yours. Now, it's true. You haven't done a kinyan necessarily, but we can't pater it because it's not yours if it's staying by you forever. Ashach has another suggestion. So that's suggestion number one. Give it to a guy. And borrow it from. Yeah, what's the problem is that you live in Gimel, so there's like two goyim in all of Gimel, and where are you going to find a guy? You have to go to Sternbach's yeshiva, he doesn't want to come out of the kitchen, you have to like force the guy to come out. So where are you going to find a guy? So there is another suggestion that the Shach brings, it's actually quoted by the Mishnah Berurah in Aruch Chaim, by Hilchos Shabbos, in Shin Chav Gimel. The Shach here makes reference to it. He doesn't give you all the details, but he says that since the issue is that it looks like Tikkun Kli, it's not really Tikkun Kli, but it looks like Tikkun Kli. So if you can tovel it in an inconspicuous way, and in a way that's not obvious what you're doing, so that would be okay. So he says that if you put it into the mikvah, and you fill it up, let's say it's a cup, and you fill it up, you know, as if like you're going to be drinking from it, you don't stand there, like, for instance, he says you don't make a bracha. You lose out in the bracha. But if you make a bracha, then it's clear what you're doing. But he says that if you fill it up in a way that makes it look like, now, you know, who then fills up a cup of water from the mikvah, right? Nobody really does that nowadays. But that's what he brings down as another possible way to get out of it on Shabbos, is that if you can do it in some type of, you know, if you go down to the river, you fill it up in a way, if it's a cup, and I don't know about a fork, I don't know what you would do with a fork, unless you're like pretending like you're cleaning it. But if you do it in a way that doesn't look like you're toffling it, so the Shach says there might be room to be makom. What was that? Because it's only dummy the tikkun, because it's not actually tikkun. It just looks like it, because you weren't able to use it before, now you can. But the halachic tikkun, it says, is not actually tikkun kli. It's just they what goes on it because it's domo, right? We know that by the shvusim of Shabbos, there are really two types. There's one, there are things that are shema yavo, and there are things that are dumyu. So this falls into the category of something that's dumyu. It's not actually tikkun. You're saying, but halachically it's tikkun. Right, okay, but that's how they learn. All right, what I want to do just for like the next 10 minutes, it's a lot, 15 minutes, a lot. I put here on the sheet, we're going to run through it very, very quickly. And if there are any errors, I hope there are not, for the Tzviwa, that there shouldn't be any errors. But a very quick review of everything that we've learned. Baruch Hashem, we're not going to into all the discussion, but we're just going to run through it very, very quickly. So if you take a look on page one, here goes Tzviwa review. So we have our intro, background, right? The Battle of Midian, that's where the pasuk comes up. We have the pasuk here, Achas Azob, Es HaKesef, Es HaNechoshes, Es HaBarzov, Es HaBdil, Es HaOferes, Kol Dover SheYovo Beish Tavir Beish V'Taher, and the Gemara Darshans, the extra word V'Taher, Ach Yimein V'Yizchatev, the Gemara Darshans from that word V'Taher, we had a little bit of discussion how they darshan it. That's the makor that besides kashering it, you also need to tovel it. And we pointed out the reason, it's not your kashering it, it's not the question of kosher, not kosher. It's not for Tumah v'Tahara, that's also not what's going on here, but it's something else. We quoted from Rishonim that it's to be machnesit into Kedushas Yisrael. It's a very mechudish idea that the kelim that we use have to also be designated towards a more elevated purpose. Quoted a machlokas about whether it's Dioraisa Durabana. We said Rov Rishonim say that it's a din Dioraisa, and the nafkaminas we talked about, Katan, right? We quoted how the reason why we're not mam in the katan is because it's the oraisa. If it would be the rabbanon, then we would be mam. We would believe the katan. We also had a question of suffik. If it's a suffik, if a kli was tavled, then you might also have to go to chumrah because it's suffik the oraisa. But we did note that besides the question of the etzem adin, there's also a question of using it without tefillah. Are you over on nisr the oraisa? The Chassam Sofer says for sure. You're on nisr the oraisa, but others were makel that even if you want to learn that the din is a din the oraisa, but to use it without the tefillah might only be a dindur rabban, which is an interesting shita, which we're not going to talk about in detail for now. Okay, the basic rule is that clay se'uda, that's one very important point, which are acquired from a Gentile, require tefillah and a mikvah of 40 sah, which was itself a chiddush, right? We said that by the Tumah V'Tahara, you don't always need 40 sah for Tumah V'Tahara of a kli. And if it's big enough to be machzik the kli, it's okay. If it's a mayim, not in a mikvah, if it's a mayim. Right? And when we said that when it comes to tefillas kelim, whether it's a mikvah, whether it's a mayim, you always need 40 sa. All right, the materials of kelim that need tefillah. So we talked about all the metals in the pasuk are for sure tefillah with a bracha. Those are chayav midioraisa. We had a whole discussion about other metals that are not mentioned in the pasuk, like aluminum and titanium and steel, all the modern day alloys and the newer metals that they found. But most poskim say that that's also chayav midioraisa, tefillah with a bracha. Glass is midrabbanan, but it still requires a bracha, right? And as we noted a few minutes ago, that's a big mistake that people make. Glass is also chayiv and chayiv with a bracha. Ceramics do not require tefillah. What about ceramics coated with metal? That's what the Gemara discusses. So the psak was that if it's on both sides, so then we look at it as a metal kli, even though the inside is ceramic, which is potter. Since the outside and inside, since the part that you come into contact with is metal, tefillah with a bracha. But if it's only on the inside, not on the outside, but that's the part that comes in contact with the food, so the Shulchan Aruch said do tefillah without a bracha, and the Rama said tefillah with a bracha. The much more common case, because we don't usually have kelim covered with metal, is ceramics coated with glass, like all of our mugs are all coated with glass. The Shach says, follow the same rule as a metal. So if it's on the inside and the outside, so you do tefillah with a bracha. But Rabbi Akiva Eger was mechalek and spoke about a very, very thin member, glazerish. And he says that if it's a very, very thin glaze, then you should maybe do tefillah without a bracha. And a lot of people are knowing like this, Rabbi Akiva Eger, with mugs that they do tefillah without a bracha. Plastics, we said, some, the charedus does require, but in general, most people do not do tefillah at all on plastics. We noted that metal pans that are coated with the non-stick surface, like Teflon, which is a mixture of plastics, so you do tefillah without a bracha. That was Rapelsky in America. That was his psak, you do tefillah without a bracha. And therefore, a lot of times when you go into the mikvah, this happened to me just the other day, I had a frying pan that was coated with Teflon, and I had a glass cups. So my son said to me, I took him with me, he said, oh, so you're going to make, I said to him, when are we going to make the bracha? He said, oh, on the pan, and then we'll do the cups. And I said, no, I think we should probably do the opposite. We should do the cups, because the cups, I said, even though they're durabonim, they're vadei chayiv in a bracha, the Teflon pan is not necessarily chayiv. And therefore, better to do it on the on that which is, what was that?
Sadly, you have to do the rice.
Correct, so, right, that's the discussion. So I thought that for sure we should do the one.
I have four. It's a,
right, bring that as well, right. Okay. What was that? Well, it's just we're just doing the bracha, right? The bracha would be okay. Wouldn't the bracha is okay to make the bracha on the derabanan once they're misaken the bracha. I mean, brachas in general are all derabanan, except for you know brachas hamazon and maybe brachas haTorah. All brachas are derabanan.
Is it the child of kiddush? Someone who's any child derabanan.
That's because that's not just the bracha. That's the din of kiddush. Kiddush is a din d'oraisa, right? So if the man's already been yodse because he davened and the wife hasn't, right? That's the famous discussion. That's because kiddush is a din, is a mitzvah d'oraisa. It's not because of the Brei Pri HaGafen. It's because the bracha of Mekadesh HaShabbos is not only a bracha; it's also the din of kiddush, and that's d'oraisa. And then you get into the question of d'oraisa being motzi d'oraisa. Okay, one time kelim. So we talked about factory produced containers with the food in them, like tuna cans. How come you can eat out of a tuna can? Where's the tefillah? So we saw that Rosh Hashanah Zalman had the svara that it's when it's sealed, it's not really a kli. It's only when you open it that it becomes a kli. And you opened it. You're a Jew. So you made the kli. That was one svara. He had another svara here that you never really intend to acquire the kli. We then asked the question of, well, now that I've taken all the tuna out of it, can I reuse it and now use it without tefillah? So we said that the pashtus is you need to do tefillah, but we said Moshe had this chiddush that in your mind, when you decide to reuse it, that's like making it into a kli. And therefore it was made by a Jew. That was an extension of Rosh Shlomo Zalman's Kiddush. Shlomo Zalman holds that when you open it, you are physically making it into a kli. But now to reuse it, it's really a throwaway. And you decided that makes it into a kli? That was Rosh Moshe's Kiddush. And but he had rayas that machshava is very important when it comes to Dinim of Kalim. Okay, disposable aluminum tins. So we said that we basically, most folks can assume that you don't have to do tefillah on it, because it's not made for repeated usage, and it's very flimsy, it doesn't have a shame kli. We talked about if you buy it with the kavana to use it a number of times, so then maybe there's what to talk about. Okay, the definition of klei seuda. So what are klei seuda? Number one, it comes into contact with the food, and number two, it's used to serve or prepare the food. So we said that the grates on the stovetop do not need, that was quoted in the Shulchan Aruch, right? The tripodish. It does not require tefillah because it comes in contact with the pot. It doesn't come in contact with the food. As opposed to the grilling surface, which does come into contact with the food. What about a kli that comes into contact with the food, but the food is at a very early stage of preparation, right? The classic case here was the shechita knife, where the food, it's not that it's not right to eat. You could eat raw meat. That's not the issue. The issue is that it's still going to go through another process. So this was a machlokas between the Shulchan Aruch and the Ramah. Shulchan Aruch said no tefillah. The Ramah said tefillah with a bracha. What about the same exact situation, but it theoretically could be used with ready-to-eat food, right? So the example, it has no realistic usage with food. So the example that the Ramah brought, right, this was the stira in the Ramah. When it came to the shechita knife, the Ramah said do tefillah without a bracha. But then he said that the matzah rollers, the hole makers, you don't do tefillah on it. Why? Because it comes with the dough, and the dough is not ready to be eaten. Why is that different than the schnitzel hammer, or the shechita knife? So we saw that there was the chiluk made between the shach says in the Ramah that the difference is because the matzah rollers are only used for food that's not ready to be eaten, as opposed to the shechita knife, which could theoretically be used to cut vegetables. Okay, moving on. Subjective definition of a kli. So we said that something is only considered kli suda if you buy it with the intention of using it for kli suda. Just because you bought a knife in the kitchen section of IKEA doesn't mean you have to tuvel it. If you're planning on using it for cutting plastic or cutting arts and crafts, you don't have to tuvel it. The question is, what if you want to now use it once for food? So the Shulchan Aruch said that you don't have to do tefillah. And that was the assumption that they made in the Shulchan Aruch. That's because we go based on Rov Tashmisha. Since most of your usage is going to be for arts and crafts, you don't have to tefillah it. But the Rambam said you have to do tefillah with a bracha, even for a derech arai usage. There was a big discussion in the Achronim what the Rambam meant. Why is the Rambam being machmir? Whatever happened to Rov Tashmisha? So the Aruch HaShulchan says it must mean that when you bought it, even though you bought it for arts and crafts, you also had in mind that you're going to sometimes use it for food. One of the examples that we brought was maybe a Swiss Army knife. A Swiss Army knife, which you're generally using for cutting string and things like that, but you do plan on cutting up a hot dog once in a while with it. So that would require tefillah, according to Rama, with a bracha. But the more accepted approach is that of the Minchas Yitzchak. And he says that it depends on whether it's something that's fundamentally a kli food or not fundamentally a kli food. A knife bought in the kitchen center of IKEA is really a food kli. Food kli, not a kli food. A food kli. But you're strange and you're using it for arts and crafts. So that type of kli, if you want to use it once for food, you're going to need to tefillah it with a bracha, according to the Rambam. That's what the Rambam meant. But if it's something that's not a kli food, it's like a saw, and you want to use it once to cut a piece of meat, then for sure you don't need tefillah. Okay. What does contact with the food include? Defining contact with the food. So if you have kelim that only occasionally come into contact with the food, it wouldn't require tefillah. Unless you have the intention that you're going to once in a while, like we saw before in the Aruch HaShulchan. So there's some of the examples that we talked about. I don't think I wrote one here. The glass plate in the microwave. So if you're from Switzerland and you don't put your rolls directly onto the glass plate, because you always put a kli down, so you don't have to tefillah the glass plate in the microwave. But if you bought it with the intention that you're going to sometimes use it with the raw roll to defrost, so then you would need to. But here we would also make the distinction. Like, for instance, a plata is definitely not a kli, a food kli, a plata. So even if you once in a while put the challah right onto the plata, l'chor, you would not need to tafel it. All right, storage, a couple of other things. We talked about tinfoil. Does it make a difference? That's not considered a chatzitza. So you can't just wrap things in tinfoil and then avoid, you can't wrap a plate in tinfoil and avoid tefillah because of that. And say, oh, the tinfoil doesn't require tefillah, so it's only coming in contact with the tinfoil. Pot covers. We said pot covers require tefillah, even if they don't come into contact with the actual food, but because of all the steam, and it's part of the cooking process, so it's required, it's considered. We said that the chiddush there of Rav Shlomo Zalman was that if you're just toveling a pot with its cover, and you hold like the Shulchan Aruch, the bracha you make is al tefillas keli. You don't say kelim, because it's one kli. That's the whole lumdus of why you're chayiv, because they function together. Okay, storage kelim. So I don't know if you remember, we read inside Rav Kiv Eger. Rav Kiv Eger discussed the storage kelim. He had a whole discussion about it, but what came out in halacha is that if it's a storage kli that is used for food that's ready to be eaten, like sugar or nuts, you do tefillah without a bracha. Kiv Eger thought you do make a bracha, but we said it's a machlokes. As opposed to storage kelim, which are used for food that's not ready to be eaten, like coffee beans or flour, so then that would not require tefillah. So that's a real halacha that comes up. If you have a kli that's only storing flour, it's a storage kli, so then it wouldn't require tefillah.
What if you get a kli, buy something, like mayonnaise out of glass, and you use it all the time, dish out the mayonnaise, but is it a kli, in a glass kli?
I mean, but you buy it like that.
You buy it like that.
So that would be horrible. You go back to our hector of... that you're not using it afterwards. You're only using it, you're going to throw it away when you're
right,
finished.
You use it as a dish on this table.
Or you put it out to
yeah,
serve.
Have everything to serve. Nice.
Get
them,
right? Get your mayonnaise in a glass jar.
To make the glass jar nice, then you put it on the table.
She's saying if the svara was that, oh, you don't care about the kli, you're just, you need to,
right.
So here you do care, it's nice. It's
on the table easy.
Interesting. So, and it's also hard to have the svara if it's glass and has a cap on top. To say
before.
That when you opened it, you made it into
like
a kli. It wasn't, right? It's a good question. I'm not sure. I'll try to look into it. Okay, large kelim. So we said that large kelim are not considered klei seuda. That's why a table, even if you eat on the table, you don't have to tovel it. Why is it different than a plate? So that's not considered klei seuda. We said that the Aruch HaShulchan had this chiddush about industrial-sized kelim as well. But if you can't move it around, so maybe it's not considered klei seuda, even though really, ideally, you should do tefillah on it. Okay, we have 1 minute, so I'll just... Well, you see that 15 towards the bottom, 15, 16, 17, 18, 19 is everything that we did today. And I guess we'll stop here for now. You can finish going through the review on your own if you'd like. But these are, I hope that hopefully this will be something that you can reference. And I would definitely give, listen, I think right now everybody knows this siman very well. We've read through every sif inside. It's really kedai, and I'm not like here to give you homework, but we're not going to share next week because it will be Hanukkah, so we'll be off for Hanukkah. But if you take half hour, 45 minutes, you can really read through the whole sif in 45 minutes. The whole siman, kof kof. You could read through it. It's a great, it's one siman, all of Hilchos Tefilas Kelim right there. We have our review sheet, and we tried to point out when there's an important shach. You can look at that also, but even just to know the basic simanim is a very chashuv kinyan. So yeshikach to everyone, and we'll talk after Hanukkah, try to pick a new topic to learn. Okay.